From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
Joining me now is former deputy editor at Gourmet magazine, Jocelyn Zuckerman. She's joining me to talk about her new book, Planet Palm, how palm oil ended up in everything and endangered the world. Plantations producing palm oil now cover more than 104,000 square miles. That's an area larger than New Zealand, with producers running out of land in Indonesia and Malaysia, which together account for some 85% of today's global palm oil supply. They're expanding really all over the world, wreaking ecological, economic, social, and political havoc everywhere they go. Jocelyn Zuckerman, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Lynn. It's great to be here.
So your inquiry into the takeover of palm oil spanned four continents, several years, and you go back a couple of centuries. So can you take us back a couple of centuries? Where did the palm oil come from?
So the palm oil plant is native to West and Central Africa. So for thousands of years, the populations there, it's been central to their cuisine and their culture, still is. Beginning in the 1800s, Europeans began sourcing palm oil from Africa to use for making, first for lighting their lamps, and then for use in soaps and candles, and eventually in margarines.
And now we know that palm oil is in just about every processed food. And why is that? I mean, we know it's obviously readily available, but the onslaught of palm oil had something to do with this whole question of fats. And so maybe I should ask you about that, just to explain, you know, when trans fats were sort of looked upon as what you don't want, palm oils emerged on the market as the saturated fat, which is the counter to trans fat. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so trans fats result when you hydrogenate liquid oils. And as we learned that trans fats are bad for our health. So in the mid-2000s, the Food and Drug Administration required manufacturers to put on the labels if there were trans fats present in these products. The public now knew that was dangerous, so manufacturers didn't want to have to label that. So they found an alternative to trans fats. And palm oil, the flesh of the oil palm fruit, is 50% saturated fat. So it's solid, it's semi-solid at room temperature, so it doesn't require that process of hydrogenation, so you don't get those harmful trans fats. So manufacturers swapped in palm oil in many cases where they have been using hydrogenated oils.
Can you explain to us the, you know, the difference between the type of palm tree that you see, like a date palm, versus a palm oil plant?
Uh-huh. So I had never seen a palm oil plant. I mean, I didn't even know they existed when I went on my first trip to Liberia. It looks, certainly the ones in Africa look like a coconut palm you'd see, you know, in the Caribbean, in any tropical location. But instead of coconuts up there under the canopy are these big fruit bunches. They're probably about maybe like 2 feet in diameter and very heavy. They can weigh like 70 pounds. And inside these spiky brown bunches are hundreds of these little fruits. They're about the size of a date or like an elongated plum. They're shiny, sort of red-orange. The flesh of the oil palm is this shiny, oily orange. And then inside is a white kernel. So manufacturers use both the oil from the flesh, which is palm oil, and then they crush those kernels and get palm kernel oil, which is largely what is used in makeup and personal care products.
You talk about how the palm oil plant is very poorly understood. Why is this?
I think just because we don't know about it. I mean, it's not poorly understood by the folks who grow it and who live right amid the plantations. But in terms of Americans, I think we just, it's been sort of off our radar, mainly because most of it's grown on the other side of the world. And maybe, you know, the manufacturers that are using this cheap oil that is linked to, in many cases, deforestation and labor abuses don't want us to know about it.
I'm curious about, you know, your inquiry into this and the research that you did. I think probably pretty clearly delineated, you know, what types of oil we should be eating, both for our health and for the environment, and what we shouldn't be eating at all. Do you feel like there's no place for palm oil?
No, I think there's a place for some palm oil. I think it needs to be produced in a more responsible way. I think we do need to slam the brakes on tropical deforestation if we want this planet to survive, given the climate implications. We can go back to that. I just think that we don't need this much palm oil in the diet. I mean, it's mostly used in processed foods, which we know is not good for us anyway. So I think we need to use that land to produce fruits and vegetables, grains that are going to be healthy for people and for the planet, and not this garbage food that's making food manufacturers rich and some of the big companies over in Southeast Asia, maybe some corrupt government officials as well.
You talk about how India is the largest importer of palm oil. India also has a disproportionate number of people with type 2 diabetes, and it's growing. And it was surprising to me, A, that so much is imported into India, and then this correlation, or is there a correlation in your mind?
I think there's a correlation. You know, as I'm sure you know, nutrition science is very tricky. It's hard to pin one thing on something else. And Indians are, they're genetically, at least this generation is genetically disposed to have these sort of fatty stomachs. They trace it to malnutrition in the past. So there are obviously different factors at work, but it can't be helping the population that this unhealthy oil is flooding in, and that there are all these you know, deep fried snacks and ultra processed foods that are entering the diet. Both made by street vendors, and then also by multinational corporations who are going into a lot of these poorer countries and dumping their junk food there.
Right. I feel like maybe in the last decade, sometimes we've stopped reading labels because it's truly so cyclical. And it's based on a lot of trends about today and this month and this year, you know, what's good for us and what's bad for us. For some reason, when I look at the ingredients or a label, I see palm oil and I say to myself, although I've never really been sure why until now, until I've taken a look at your book, you know, I just say it's not healthy. It's not good. Help us decipher reading a label and what we want to see in there as an oil instead of palm oil.
Well, I guess, I mean, as I think I said, it's 50% saturated fat. So that's not great. But, you know, we all need some oil in our diet. And my main issue with palm oil is the kinds of foods that you're finding it in, which is processed foods, which are not good for us. But also, even more important to me are the environmental issues and the human rights issues that are tied up with its manufacture.
You went over 4 continents. So what that tells me is that the proliferation of palm oil around the globe. So there were continents or areas of the globe where there was no palm oil produced. And then since it's come into favor by, you know, those who are manufacturing processed food, that's when we started to see deforestation on other continents other than the African continent?
Well, no, the industry in Southeast Asia really, it got its start around the turn of the century when synthetic rubber made the prices of natural rubber go down. So a lot of planters in what was then Malaya and the Dutch East Indies replaced their rubber with oil palm. And then the after independence, now Indonesia and Malaysia had a lot of poor people and so gave them land, plots of land and oil palm seedlings. So it was sort of a poverty alleviation scheme at that point. And then manufacturers realized, or refiners figured out ways to fractionate the two oils and how they could use them in all sorts of these different products. And so the proliferation of these plantations just exploded. And then partly, again, in this country because of the FDA situation and the trans fats. And then there was also in 2007, George W. Bush introduced a biofuels mandate that had the effect of diverting domestic soy and corn oil to biofuels. which left a vacuum in the food supply. And so palm oil came in to fill that vacuum as well.
Okay. But palm oils are also used as a biofuel. Is that correct?
Oil palm, yes.
And in terms of how does it function in industrial materials and also as a biofuel? Is that an application that works better than eating the palm oil?
That's a good question. I know there's a lot of sort of political scientists and others trying to figure out now that there's all this oil palm growing and nutritionists, you know, is it better to put it in cars or is it better to put it in people? So I'm not quite sure. I think the point is that we don't want to chop down tropical rainforests for unhealthy foods or to power our cars, but to, you know, keep those ecosystems in place.
Right. My guest is Jocelyn Zuckerman. She has written a new book called Planet Palm, How Palm Oil Ended Up in Everything and Endangered the World. Jocelyn, there's so much that we don't know about the social aspects of these types of industries like the palm oil industry. Wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about those who work in this industry and what danger there is to them.
Okay, so I did my main labor reporting in Honduras, where workers one after the other told me about long hours, really low wages, inadequate safety gear. They were working with dangerous chemicals like glyphosate and chlorpyrifos, which have been linked to Parkinson's disease and cancer. And they had very flimsy boots. They showed me that, and they said they got bitten by snakes through the boots. And they had these face shields, but they couldn't wear them because it was too hot. They steamed up, so they were being exposed to these chemicals. And then particularly in Malaysia, which, as I said, Malaysia and Indonesia are responsible for most of the production. Malaysia has a much smaller population than Indonesia, and the standard of living is much higher. So there aren't that many Malaysians who want menial plantation jobs. So the industry in that country relies on something like 335,000 migrant workers, trafficked in from countries like India, Bangladesh, Myanmar, often brought under false pretenses, recruited from their villages, told they're going to get good paying jobs in restaurants and hotels, put on boats, given inadequate food, water. Many die on the boats and are thrown overboard. I mean, these are horrific stories of trafficked labor. And then they're put on plantations. Often their passports are confiscated and they're paid nothing. They said that they need to be, you know, they need to work off whatever they or their parents have paid these recruiters in the first place to get them these jobs. Amnesty International and others have reported for years about the problem of child labor in the industry because often, and this is in Indonesia as well, the folks who are gathering the fruit or getting the fruits down from the trees and then gathering it into sacks and transporting it to, you know, a transport center are paid by the amount of fruit that they bring. And if the men who are actually being paid for the work can't get up to their quotas, they often have their wives and their children working with them as casual laborers, they call them, and often they don't get paid at all.
I'm wondering what you think is the best way to expose an industry like this to affect the strongest amount of change. You know, for me, when I hear about labor practices and how working in these kinds of industries affect people and especially children, that is enough to sway me away from it. It's almost like the social aspects are more important than the health aspects in a way for some people. And I'm curious about what you think affects the most change.
I think exposing it, right? I mean, so much of this happens so far away. A lot of my reporting, I had to fly to the other side of the world, literally went flying to Indonesia or Malaysia. I didn't have to change my watch because it was 12 hours difference. So it's literally the other side of the world. And then often I'd have to, you know, get in a four-wheel drive and drive 8 or 9 hours on dirt roads to get to these really remote places, which is one of the reasons that the industry can get away with these abuses because nobody sees what's going on. So I think exposure through the press. Last year, actually, the United States announced that it was blocking shipments of palm oil from three major Malaysian producers, over these allegations of forced labor, including concerns over child workers and physical and sexual abuse on plantations. Some of that was in response to a series that the Associated Press had done on labor abuses in oil palm plantations. So I think you know, the idea is we educate ourselves, we get on social media, we talk about it, we call out these companies and these traders and ask them, you know, why are they selling these products that are linked to deforestation and human rights abuses? We want to see transparency on their websites, where they're sourcing this stuff from. And if not, we're not going to buy it.
Right. Well, that's hopeful to hear. And that was going to be my next question about, in the first world, we have the luxury of researching these things. We have people like you who are making the inquiry, exploring the question, writing books on it. It's in the media here in the developed world, but I suppose it all is affected by the pocketbook, whether or not we continue to support these industries. I'm wondering if in the developing world, in the areas where the oil palm is grown, are they hearing the same? Are they reading your book? What is the reaction?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if they're reading the book, but I think part of it is consumers, you know, need to speak out, but I also think governments, and there is a positive development on that front. So I read just last week that Senator Brian Schatz, Democrat of Hawaii, is recently announced that he's going to introduce legislation that would put in place import requirements for agricultural commodities associated with illegal deforestation. The other thing that happened about a month ago, maybe, was it was during President Biden's climate summit. A group including the United States, Britain, and Norway, along with a bunch of companies, including Amazon, Airbnb, Unilever, Nestle, introduced an initiative called LEAF, Lowering Emissions by Accelerating Forest Finance, aimed specifically at creating an international marketplace in which carbon credits can be sold in exchange for avoiding deforestation. So these two initiatives are more focused on the environmental impacts, but as I said, the US, you know, stopped these imports of palm oil from Malaysia that were linked to labor abuses. So I think we're seeing some change, and I think that is due to the fact that people are making their voices heard, that this stuff matters.
I have just a minute or so left, and wondering if you could go into the environmental aspects of growing the oil palm. Deforestation, of course, is one thing, but what about other aspects, which could include, you know, soils depletion and monoculture and those types of things?
Right. So the other thing about a lot of tropical rainforests is that they sit on top of peatlands. Mm-hmm. Which are soils formed over thousands of years through the accumulation of organic matter. They're like wetlands. And in fact, Indonesia, which is the world's number one producer of palm oil, is home to the planet's largest concentration of tropical peatlands. And the palm oil companies, they have to drain this land and then burn it in order to prepare it for planting. And when you do that, you release insane amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I read recently that the annual carbon emissions from Indonesia's peatlands rival those of the entire state of California.
Wow.
So the idea that we're draining this, you know, these are treasures, carbon sequestration treasures, and the idea that we're draining them and burning them for more of this oil is, you know, it's just folly. The other thing is there's a connection to pandemics. So something like 75% of today's emerging infectious diseases originate in animals. And 60% of those can spread directly from animals. Over the past few decades, the number of these sort of animal to human transmission has skyrocketed, and a third of these new diseases can be linked directly to deforestation and agricultural intensification, most of it involving tropical rainforests. So the idea is you cut these habitats down, and then wildlife that carries viruses like bats, which we think is where the coronavirus came from, you know, they need to find new habitat, and that forces them into closer contact with humans. Mm. So there's just a lot of danger in screwing with tropical rainforests, basically.
That's such an interesting point. Wow. Okay, so my final question, then I'll let you go, is, you know, when you find yourself at a cocktail party or something, and people want to get the quick and dirty, and they say, what should we do as consumers? What do you say?
I would say read labels, try to avoid palm oil. If you don't eat a lot of processed food, it's not going to be a big deal in your foods. And the other thing I would say is get involved in some of the campaigns, organizations like the Rainforest Action Network, Mighty Earth, Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth. They're all looking at the environmental impacts of the industry. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch are watching very closely labor issues. So I think if you go to those websites, you get involved in campaigns, you can get on social media and talk about this stuff. You know, the more these companies and these traders hear that we care where this stuff is coming from and we care who's suffering at the other end of it, the more they're going to feel compelled to change their ways.
Jocelyn Zuckerman is my guest. Her new book is Planet Palm, How Palm Oil Ended Up in Everything and Endangered the World. Jocelyn, I'm wondering if you have a website or blog related to the book?
My website, it's not specifically related to the book. It's jocelynczuckerman.com, but there are a bunch of magazine articles that I did sort of over the course of reporting the book that you can find on there.
Excellent. Jocelyn, thank you so much for joining me. It's really, really an interesting topic, and thank you for writing the book.
Thanks so much, Lynn. I appreciate your interest.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week. We'll be right back.